Okay, today's daf in Masechet Menachot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is Daf Tzadik Vav. We're holding at the Halakha Mishnah near the top of the daf. So we've been discussing the Shtei Lechem and the Lechem HaPanim. Let's move on to the way in which we make the Chavitei Kohen Gadol. So the Chavitim of the Kohen Gadol, Lishatan, Yarichatan, Vafiatan, Bifnim. So everything has to be done inside of the chotzer, which is in modern terms, again, the azora. And that's because the chavitei kohen gadol, definitely, according to those, even, obviously those who hold that the midas hayovesh were, for sure, all of them were considered to be klishores, and they would be Makadish. Obviously, they had to be inside. Otherwise, they would be Pesach B'yotze. But even according to those who hold that the Isorein was not Kadesh, or rather that the Chatzi Isorein for the Chavitim was Kadesh. And because of that, what's the Nafkamina? There's a number of approaches. What the Nafkamina is, the Pashtus is because the Isorein was available for everybody to use, for every Minchas. They didn't want to make it Kodesh, that people shouldn't come to being Makadosh things and not realizing the Psulim that were Nogea. But the Chavitim were, of course, only for the Kohen Gadol, so they didn't have any Chashash. But in any event, definitely the Chavitei Kohen Gadol were Makadosh, and therefore you had to do all of that preparation work inside of the Azara. Otherwise, it would become Nifsal. Just one second here, one second. Yeah. Otherwise, it would become Nifsal. Because of that, they're also Dochot et HaShabbat. Obviously, if they're going to be Nifsal, if you make them before, they'll be Nifsal Buina. And therefore, they have to be done on Shabbos, but there's two things that don't have to be done on Shabbos because of Rabbi Akiva's klal. And what is that? The tchina, to actually grind the flour or to sift the flour, that doesn't have to be done on Shabbos because those things are not necessarily done in a kli shoreis, of course. How would they be done in a kli shoreis, actually? And because of that, you could do it before. And that's the klal of Rabbi Akiva, that teaches us how it is that we're supposed to deal with such things. Namely, kol melacha she'efshar la'asota mi'erev Shabbat, if you're able to do something and you can do it before Shabbos, so then the klal is, remember, that we do not do it on Shabbos, inan dochas ha'Shabbos. And only those things that are e'efshar la'asota mi'erev Shabbos, then those things that are going to be puzzle, be yotzer, be puzzle, be lina, if they're done before Shabbos, then, says Rabbi Akiva, of course, that's going to be Deicha Shabbos. And this was the klal that we had, not only here, we had this Benogea, the Dinim of Mila. This was the klal that Rabbi Akiva mentioned. We had that in the Mishnah there. We had it in Psachim, Benogea, the Korban Pesach. So this is a klal that Gavi has already taught us in a number of different places. Now, kol ha'madachot sheyesh behen ma'asek li bifnim. Any time that you have to do something, let's say the afia of the shtei alechem and alechem aponim, which we agreed has to be done bifnim, that we learned in the previous Mishnah, or the chavitei kohen gadol, which we just learned about, even the lisha, or the aricha, like we just learned. And they do not, those kind of things, are done in a kli shoreis, and they have nothing that is done b'chutz. But ma'aseh ha'menachot, those things that we have, let's say, the things that are done michutz la'azara, any ma'aseh ha'mincha, for instance, let's say the lisha, the aricha, the shtei alechem, the lechem aponim, or the tchina and the harkada of the chavitei kohen gadol, those are not done in a kli shoreis. So exactly how did we make these things? Well, let's give you the dimensions, first of all. The Shtei HaLechem, they were Shiva Orchan, they were Shiva Tvachim long, and they were four Tvachim wide, and they had Karnotehem, were Arba Etzbaot. So what exactly are these Kranot? So Rashi learns that these kronot are actually kronot. They were pieces of flour, of a dough, I should say, that were stuck on to the four sides of those lechomin. The Rambam doesn't bring anything about anything sticking on, and he simply understands karnotehem is the height. So why do we call it karnotehem? I'm assuming it's called karnotehem because when you bake something, it generally it may slope in the middle. But if you measure it from the edge, so you know that you've got the four etzba'ot. Now, he doesn't go with Rashi's pshat at all, and it's mashma simply gofan, because he uses that mida always in terms of the gova. So the shtei alechem, he says, is the gova of what it says over your arba etzpaot. And when it comes to the lechem ha'panim, he also measures the kranot that are mentioned over here as gova. So the lechem ha'panim, or ko asara, each one was 10 tefachim long, which is going to be very important because it's going to define how much of the lechem had to be bent upwards in order to move, that was the ponim of the lechem, in order to not stick out over the shulchan, but rather to go above the shulchan. So that we'll see, depends on how we measure the shulchan, as we already spoke about before, whether the shulchan was ba'ama shel chamisha tefachim, or the shulchan was ba'ama shel shisha tefachim, as we're going to see in the Mishnah as we go along. So they were 5 tefachim wide, and if that's the case, if it was 5 tefachim, then the two of them together would actually, this would be the entire length of the shulchan, entire width of the shulchan, depending on if you hold that it was chamisha tefachim was the ama of the shulchan, as we'll see. And the karnotav, which again, according to Rashi, means the pieces that you stuck on. I'm sure you've all seen the pictures. I think somebody actually put it up on the daf. Maybe it was handy. In which you see these horn-like things, which in the end are bent over, and you were wondering, what the heck is that? How did that get in there? That's going to be a result of Rashi's pshat of what these kranot are and where they went when you bent the lechem up over the shulchan. But again, according to the Rambam, there are no such thing. There are no kranas, and we have a very simple description of the height. The karnotav are here were sheva etzba'ot, which was the actual height of the lechem, according to the Rambam, according to Rashi, were the stuck-on pieces of dough at the edges. Now, Reb Yehuda, you'll remember from your Seder Shel Pesach, he always likes to give things a simen that you'll remember. So, Reb Yehuda gave a simen. Shelo tit'eh, I'd like you to make sure you don't get mixed up, and you've got to have a simen for remembering what the shtei lechem was and what the lechem aponim was. So the simen for the lechem, the shtei lechem, is zadad. Zadad is 7 tefachim long, dalid tefachim rochav, and, according to Rambam, dalid etzbaot high. And lechem aponim, the simen is yahaz, which is 10 tefachim the length, 5 tefachim the width, and 7 etzba'ot, the height according to the Rambam, and these little stick-on pieces of dough according to Rashi. Ben Zoma Omer, if it says in the Pasuk, V'natata ala shulchan lechem panim lefanai tamid, that means that there has to be panim. It's calling it lechem panim. So that means that it has to have facing, as we would say in English. You want to say you have facing sides, you use the word face, which is panim, the same word that we use for the lechem. So it has to have facing sides, in which case we're going to have to actually see to it and that the fanot, which are the faces, are a limud directly from the pasuk. The Rambam learned that it's not referring to the faces, meaning the din of the lechem aponim, which was pashtas, but rather the repeat of the lechem aponim lefanai tamid comes just to be merames that there are 6 sides. And therefore, he says there are 6 panim. What he means, of course, is that if you take a look at the lechem as a teva perutza, so then what you have is 6 sides. You've got the 2 sides on each side, and the bottom. And each of those has, of course, it's three-dimensional, and it's got a side in the back. So you've got 2, 2, and 2, which equals 6. That's how he understands it in a very different way than the simple pshat over here that the other Rafarsha were explaining. So now take the lechem and let's put it onto the shulchan. And then we'll see how it is that we get the idea. We've already spoken about this before, actually, but how we get the idea of the height of the shulchan and where the lechem goes. So ha-shulchan, where we're going to put the lechem upon him, was 10 tvachim long, and roch bo chamisha tvachim, and this is going according to the das of Rabbi Yehuda, that the amat ha-kelim was chamisha tvachim. So because of that, if the shulchan was two amas, then it was asara tvachim, which was exactly this length. And that would fit the lechem aponim on it as follows. So this, again, is all according to Rabbi Yehuda, which we had the machlokes. So the lechem aponim was 10 long and 5 wide, as we said. So you take the length of the lechem, noten orko keneged rochbo shel shulchan. So now we take the 10 tvachim, put them right in the middle so that we've got 5 sticking out on either side of the shulchan. That's the part of the dough that has to be bent upwards and be baked so that it extends above the shulchan. So you bend 2.5 tvachim on each side. Kofir tvachim umechza mikan, tvachim umechza mikan, and that gives you the lechem is on the shulchan up until the very edge, and then it is bent upwards. And that's the same thing would be true. In that case, the orech would fill up the entire rochav of the shulchan, and the same thing would be true because we had 5 of tvachim left, and the same thing would be true with the width. So we've got 5 tvachim covering the actual shulchan. That covered the entire rochav of the shulchan, and the rochav of the lechem would take exactly half of the orech of the shulchan. So if you put the 2 sidrei lechem one next to the other, they would fill up the entire shulchan, and there would be no room to put anything else on the shulchan. And this is the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, again, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that the amos hakelim were amos of chamisha tvachim. But Rabbi Meir argues. Rabbi Meir Omer, no, the shulchan was be'ama shashisha tvachim, the standard ama, and therefore it was 12 tvachim. It was 6 times 2, not 5 times 2. So it was 12 tvachim long, and it was 6 tvachim wide. And therefore, if we put the lechem down on it, it fits as follows, according to Rabbi Meir. The lechem aponim is orko asara, v'rochbo chamisha. That's a given. Nobody's arguing about that. You put the orech of the lechem. The length of the lechem goes along the width of the shulchan, and that takes up the 6 of the tvachim, leaving 4 tvachim to get to 10, 2 on each side, which means that we bend up the lechem. Obviously, we don't do this when it's lechem, but we make it originally in that shape. Kofel tvachayim mikan utvachayim mikan. So we bend 2 tvachim on each side. So according to Rabbi Meir, the height was only 2 tvachim. As far as the width is concerned, the width are memale, the rochav of the shulchan, but it leaves 2 that are empty, because you've got tvachayim revach be'emtza, because according to him, each one of those amos actually consisted of an additional tefach, and because of that, you've got 2 additional tvachim, and there's 2 additional tvachim were left empty, and that, of course, we know we have a machlokas about where exactly we put the Bezichei Levena. If you hold that the Bezichei Levena were put on the shulchan proper and not on the lechem, so then, as we're going to be talking about again, so then we had a place to put the Bezichei Levena on. We had the 2 tvachim between the 2 sidorim, and that would be the portion of need for that, is because just like we were careful, as we've spoken about before and we'll be speaking about again, we were careful to have these half straws to make sure that we've got air circulating between all of the lechem. We needed to have air circulating between the lechem also on the width. And therefore, those two tvachim gave room for the air, kedeshite ruach menashevet b'nehem. We want it to be properly aerated so that the lechem doesn't get moldy. Abashol Omer, actually, the important thing that we did in that space was those two tvachim, b'shama yunotnim shnei b'zicha levena. Shal lechem apanim, remember that this was a machlokes between Abashol and the Chachonim. And indeed, Amru lo, so the Chachomim said to Abashol, doesn't it say in the Pasuk, Alo kvar nemar venatata al hamarechet levon hazaka? Where are you supposed to put the levona, the bezicha levona, on top of the marechet? So that means, and we spoke about that yesterday, that means that you would have to make a place inside of the lechem to be able to hold, even if you hold that the shape of the lechem was not flat, and it was like a svina, well, we would have had to hollow out a place in order to put the bezicha levona. So why do we need a place between the two ma'arachot? So apparently it's on the ma'arachot. Amar lahem, so said Abashol, and in the pasuk, when it says how the shvatim were arranged, it says, the alav mateh menashe. I suppose you'd think that that means that they took mateh menashe and they put it on top of another shevet. That's what you think? So obviously it means alav mateh menashe, and right up against that came mateh menashe. So it means the same thing over here. Al ha-ma'arechet simply means right up against the ma'arechet, on the shulchan. It does not mean on top of the ma'arechet, and that would be the proper way of understanding the pasuk. Now, in terms of the support, so remember we had a machlokas about the snifim. So what do we do with the snifim? Remember, it was dependent on whether we held that the shape of the lechem, if it was keteva, prutza, and it had a flat bottom, so then the snifim had to stand on the floor. And if we held that it was like a svina roketet, then it actually had room to be put directly on top of the shulchan, and it's supported with the curved golden pieces that would then bend in order to take the weight of the lechem on them, that would be held above the level of the shulchan, but there was no need to go down to the floor. So that was the machlokas we had earlier. And here, our Mishnah goes, according to the Man Yomar, that we were dealing with the lechem that were keteva prutza. And remember that we pointed out that even though we had brought a raya from the Braita, that it was kisvina roketet, that all of the peskim talk about it, but pashtas as if it was a teva prutz, and we're wondering why that's true. And I pointed out that the derech of psak goes according to the way in which the sugya as a whole is balanced. And here we have once again another indication that we take for granted that the shape of the lechem needed to put the snifim on the actual ground and not on the shulchan, because the arba snifim, shel zahav, that were there, where did they stand? Hayusham, at the edges of the shulchan, and they were standing on the floor, muftzalim baroshehem, they had these pitzulim, and what are these pitzulim? These pitzulim were basically either actual little, what do you call that, like a little shelf, a tiny shelf that would support the kanim, or it would mean an actual pitzul, would mean just like one little piece hanging down, and then you would fit the kane onto it, so it would click onto a little piece that stuck out. That's a machlokas of how precisely it was made. And you had these nifim that would be up against the lechem, shayusom chimbahem, and you had shnayim leseder zeh, mishnayim leseder zeh, and they would stand on either side. And the kanim, there were 28 of these kanim. The kanim, remember, were straws that had been sliced in half, so that when you put the straw down facing the curve, facing downwards, you would only have a tiny area of contact between the straw and the lechem. And in between the two parts of the contact, you would have air circulating. And that was done again in order to make sure that we had air circulating between every one of the lechemim. The lechem that was on the bottom, if it was keteva prutza, was on a gold surface. Gold is a fantastic conductor, as you know, which is why it's used even today in computer contacts. And there too, by putting the lechem on top of the gold conducted away any of the heat that would have caused ipush on the lechem. And it therefore required the air only between the lechemim. And that's why we had a total of only 28 kanim, and every kana was kachatzi kaneh chalul. It was like a straw that was split lengthwise down its middle, 14 for each side. So you had arba'asar l'seder zeh, arba'asar l'seder zeh, and this way, if you had six challahs, one challah on top of the other, the lowest challah was on the shulchan itself, the four intermediate chalot were on three kanim apiece, which gives us 12. But the upper challah only had to be placed on two kanim because there was very little weight and it didn't need that much support. It was only one challah that was sitting on the challah beneath it. So there were three for each of the middle four, and another, which gives us 12, and another two between the fifth and the sixth challah on each one. And that gives us 14 on each side, which is a total of 28. Now, the question is, what do we do about this on Shabbos? Because we're basically building, if we're using these kanim, putting the lechem on top of it, that would be a binyan. So the sidur of those kanim, or the stira, which is a netilah, if we take them off, neither of those things should be docha Shabbos, because there's certainly nothing is going to happen if it's just there for a little bit of time until Mitzvah Shabbos. And therefore, you could do this before Shabbos. So we take out the kanim, which only are going to be removing it for until the time that we put on the new lechem tomorrow. So basically, it's only going to be for half of the day. So we do Erev Shabbos, Nichmas Erev Shabbos, Vishomtem, we take out all of the kanim, and we put them down in the area that was between the two ma'arachot, if you hold like Rebbe Meir, that there were Tvachayim Revach Be'emtza, remember? So you put them down on the Shulchan La'orko Shulchan. Then, on Shabbos, you put up the lechem without putting the kanim on, and then on Mitzvah Shabbos, you would come in and you would slide in the kanim in order to support the chalot. So that way it only had until Mitzvah Shabbos to be without the kanim, and it wasn't going to be mitapish in that time. Kol ha-kelim shayu b'migdash, as far as how these kelim were placed in the heichal itself, the klal was that all of the kelim, the length of the kli, was facing the width of the bayis. So that would mean the length, remember, the length of the Beis HaMikdash went east to west. So the Mishnah is telling us that the kelim that were inside, including the Shulchan, their length would be going from east to west. The only thing that wasn't this way was the Arayin HaBris. So the length was placed to the length and the width was placed to the width, but the Aron was the opposite. The length was placed to the width and the width was placed to the length. So that was the only thing that was placed mitzofen l'dorein. Moving on. This, of course, is a chibur of quite a few different mishnayos, but we've got the whole sugya put together into one giant mishnah. And that was, well, we could stop here, I suppose, and do the Gemara. Okay. So, kol ha-menachot, yesh behen ma'aseh kli bifnim, said in the Mishnah that all menachas have something that is done inside. Shalu et Rebbe, how do we know that, as the Mishnah said, you have to do the actual lisha and the aricha. How do we know that you have to do that bifnim? Because this was something that you were saying is true whether or not you hold that the halacha is that the midos were niskadoshu. So if the midos were not niskadoshu and the isarin of flour that you put in isn't kodesh, so what are we referring to here? What we called before the bisa. So that is that special, that kneading trough where we put everything in. We put in the original shemen, and then we put in the yisoron, and all of the work is done inside of that bisa. And that needed to be a kli sharis. But how do we know that? Shalu et Rebbe, zominai. Amar lehem, well, take a look in Yecheskel and join up with the original tour guide, which was the Malach, that showed Yecheskel around in the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi. And Amar Lehem, Rebbe said to them, look, it said that the Malach said, Vayomer Eli, the Malach that was the tour guide for Yecheskel, said to me, Ze HaMakom, okay, here we're coming to the kitchen area, Asher Yevashru Sham HaKohanim Et HaAsham V'Et HaChatat, So, what was this tour guide telling Yecheskel? Here is the kitchen area where the preparations of the chatas and the asham, and the place where you bake the mincha, in order to make certain that they are not done outside of the azara. So, obviously, it's comparing this, everything done in this kitchen, the mincha, it's comparing to the chatas and the asham. Just like the asham and the chatas, we know, is to unakli, af mincha nani, is to unakli. It says beferish that this is where they were mevasha, which means in what says beferish to be mevasha, there's no way to be mevasha without a kli. And since it says, you have to do it here because if you take it outside, it'll be paso, because it says beferish levilti hotzia lachatzera chitzana. So then that means that the same way that the bisho was clearly in a kli shares, so it means also that the mincha was prepared inside of a kli shares. That is where we know that we have this bisa. Then the Mishnah said that the shulchan was 10 tefachim long. And as we learned before, the machlokis between the two shitas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir about whether the Amashal Kalim was Amashal Chamishat Vachim or Amashal Shishat Vachim had another implication. Remember? The implication was that the Shulchan would be Mekadesh all the way up to that height. So we were talking before, when we asked what would be the din of a kometz that is put on the shulchan, even though there's no sides to the shulchan, and therefore it's not a kli that holds things, whether the shulchan is mekadesh. This was the Gemara that we're about to read that we learned before, where Rabbi Yochanan points out something that doesn't seem to have any meaning other than some simple arithmetic, which we don't need Rabbi Yochanan for. And he points out that if you hold that you like Rabbi Yehuda, that the shulchan was only 10 tvachim and 5 tvachim wide, so then that would mean that you would have 5 tvachim extras of that needed to be bent, 2.5 tvachim on each side. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, l'divrei ha'omer, tvachayim u'mechza kofel, that you had to bend up each one of these lechems 2.5 tvachim high, that would mean that the shulchan is going to be mekadesh all the way up to the Chamisha Asar Tvachim Lamala. Because since you had 6 lechems, and each one of those sides, right, at 6 lechems, so you multiply the 6 times the 2.5 of that was high, and you end up with 15 tvachim. So that would show that the Shulchan is Mekadesh 15 Tvachim high. So as the Gemara pointed out before, we don't need Rabbi Yochanan to teach us how to multiply 6 times 2.5. But the point that Rabbi Yochanan is making is that the Shulchan would obviously be Mekadesh other things since it works in terms of the Kiddush HaLechem. That's what he must be saying. And L'divrei HaOmer, according to Rabbi Meir, that the Amma Shel Kelim were six tvachim, in which case we only had the four tvachim extra to get to the 10 of the length of the lechem that was lying across the width of the shulchan. So according to Rabbi Meir, you only bent up two tvachim for everyone. So tvachayim kofel, so then you need to multiply 2 times 6, not 2.5 times 6. That would mean that the shulchan is only mekadesh 12, because 2 times 6 is 12. But the problem is, as the Gemara, if you just described to us the fact that we need these kanim, why don't you add the height of the kanim? So, does it make sense? Ha'ika kanim? Well, the kanim, actually, they were not mamish between the lechem totally. They were sunk into the lechem. After all, there's a sharp side, and mostly it sinks in. What? But if they sink in, you mean totally? If they totally sink in, then they're not doing anything. I mean, the only reason you had the kanim in the first place, my taima, mishumia pushe lechem. You don't want the lechem to become moldy. So you needed to have the fresh air. So now you're telling me that they're sunken into the bread and sof-sof coming up esh lechem. I mean, they're not doing a darn thing, are they? No, I don't mean totally. I mean, the migbale purita, they're lifted up a little bit to allow air in. Okay, so then I'm asking you the same question. Don't try to hide behind words. So, okay, so what about that little bit? Why don't we add that? Ve'ika yipurta, multiply that times the space between the lechamim. Well, it's such a little bit, it doesn't add up to a tefach. We're looking over here just for the gross measurements of tefach. Obviously, it was more. So, but kimen de lo avi tefach lo chashivle. But what about the bezichin? If we put the bezichin on top of the lechem, so doesn't that add a significant amount of space? No. Explained to you before, the bezichin, even according to the Mad Yomar, holds al means on. It was inside of either the teva perutza or the svina rokedet. So begavei de lechem have yasve, and therefore the height of the bezichim was included in the height of the lechem. Labahadi lechem, avikaimi, went exactly up to the top of the lechem. Now, what about those kranot? Now, this is a problem, isn't it? I mean, the Rambam doesn't have any kranot. The Rambam only has the height. So how does he understand this question? So according to Rashi, Yika kranot, these kranot added those additional etzbaot to the lechem. Where were they put? So there were answers, and these are the pictures that you see in some of the, if they were bent over, so you have those edges that are bent over into the lechem. That's how Rashi understands it. According to the Rambam, obviously the problem of the kranot is that if the height itself has to be taken into consideration, then if you're going to bend it up, you're not going to bend it up to the height without forcing the lechem to be a little bit higher, because where's the thickness going to go? 7 etzbos is a serious thickness. So then that means forcing the lechem up is going to cause it to go higher. So what happened to that height? So there the Rambam also agrees. If there was anything that height, so you bent it over the edge. So the kranot legave the lechem kayeflu. You bend it over towards the lechem so that you have a maximum height of the asara, meaning the entire length. So kronot legavei de lechem kayef. Okay, but what about the misgeret of the shulchan? It says in the pasuk ve'asita lo misgeret tofach saviv. A tofach is a full tefach. So that means if you take this misgeret, which we're assuming is like a frame, right, and it's a tefach thick, and you put it on the edge of the shulchan, so then that means if you're putting the lechem apanim on the mizgeret, then the whole thing is lifted up, the additional tefach on both sides of the shulchan. So how do you get 15? It would have to be 16. You're not accounting for the mizgeret. Well, Rabbi Yochanan was explaining this according to the Man Yomar, who holds that the Mizgeret was Lamata, remember? So if the Mizgeret was there for basically for aesthetic purposes, and it was not adding any height at all. It was underneath the top of the shulchan, and it surrounded the legs of the shulchan and came down lower than the top. Okay, which is actually a fairly common design for tables, as I'm sure Alon will tell us. And because of that, it didn't need to be taken into consideration by Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, fine, but what about according to Mandi Omar, who holds that the Mizgeret was Lamala? So does it work out according to him, these cheshbonas? It does. Because even according to Mandi Omar, that the Mizgeret was Lamala, it did not actually take up space on top of the Shulchan. It bent outwards to surround the entire Shulchan, and therefore the lechem, which was on top of the shulchan, was surrounded by the mizgeret, but it was not omed on the mizgeret. So because of that, it was parakude avimur parkeda, the lechem begave the shulchan ave yosef. Ashengen, the lechem itself, was sitting on top of the lechem. And I'll bring you a raya. This is not just to make things fit to Rabbi Yochanan. This clearly is true according to the Braita, that even those who hold that the Mizgeret was Lamala, they nonetheless agree that certainly the Lechem wasn't put on top of the Mizgeret. Kitatanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Lo Yusham Sinifim. So according to Rabbi Yossi, there were no, this is a continuation of the Braisa we had, that there were the Arba Sinifim. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, there were no Sinifim. Actually, the Mizgeret of the Shulchan was the equivalent of a snif, because it supported the lechem on the bottom. So it was Mizgarto shel Shulchan ma'amedet et alechem. And they said to Rabbi Yossi, how could the Mizgeret be ma'amid the lechem if the Mizgeret was underneath the Shulchan? But anyway, Rabbi Yossi obviously holds that the Mizgeret was above the Shulchan. And nonetheless, he says that the Mizgeret was the equivalent of a sneif that was supporting the sides of the lechem. So if that's the case, he must have held that the lechem was not put on top of the Mizgeret, it was put within the Mizgeret. And therefore you see that even according to Mandi Omar, namely Rabbi Yossi, who holds that Mizgarto was Lamala, it was not taking up space on the Shulchan, it was surrounding the top of the Shulchan, and therefore the lechem was supported on the bottom by the Mizgeret. On the Rabbi Yochanan, let me point out something in terms of the Hilchas Tumah V'Torah that we can actually learn from the implications of this Mishnah. Because the Divrei HaOmer, Mizgarto Lamata Haita. So if you hold that the Mizgeret was actually underneath the Shulchan, so that shows us that the top of the Shulchan, which now does not have a Mizgeret around it. So is it a Kli? It's nothing but a flat piece, right? If you hold the Mizgeret comes on top, so then the Mizgeret provides a rim around the Shulchan. So then, okay, that's a classic clay eitz that has a Beit Kibul. And as we know, that Kalim with a Beit Kibul are Mekabel Tumah. But what about, according to the Mandi Omar, that says that the Mizgeret was not surrounding the top of the Shulchan, and it was actually under it, and the top of the Shulchan sat on the Mizgeret. Now, if it sat on the Mizgeret, then that means that the top of the Shulchan, being a separate piece, remember, the Torah defines each piece separately here, right? So the Mizgeret is supporting a flat piece of wood that is sitting on top of it. If you want to flip it over on its other side, it works exactly the same way because it does not have any kind of edging on it. There's no levazvazin. There's no edge. So now you see from here a tremendous chiddush. Because according to that Mandi Omar, since we know, and we'll see how we know this, but since we know that the Shulchan was Mekabel Tumah, if you're telling me that the Shulchan is actually just a flat slab, so then that would mean that a flat piece of wood, even though it doesn't have any base kibble, is Mekabel Tumah. which teaches that a tabla mitapechet, if you can have a slab, when we say that it's mitapechet, what we mean is that it's the same on either side, which means that it does not have any kind of edging to it. So you could just use it on one side equally as on the other side. And nonetheless, it's mekabel tumah, because I'm going to show you that the shulchan definitely was mekabel tumah. And over here, there's no base kibble. And af al pi kein, the Torah is meida, that the shulchan is mekabel tumah, as we'll see. L'divrei ha'omer misgarta l'mala haita mash'ein kein, if you hold like Rabbi Yossi, then you have no raya from here, because the shulchan ended up actually having an edging around the flat top, because the misgaret provided an edging, and therefore it could hold things on it. You put something on that flat top, it was held up by the edging around it, which was the misgaret. So then you won't have a raya. Tabla mitapechet would still be a question, tiboyelach, and you'd have to look around for a raya. But one minute, Rabbi Yochanan, you built this whole thing on a fundamental assumption that the shulchan is definitely mekabel tumah. Could you back that up? I mean, if we're saying that the shulchan is mekabel tumah, mechlal the shulchan bar kibulei tumah, we've got another problem. The other problem is that any kli eitz, remember, the posik that we learn, tumah of kelim that are eitzim, is from the posik that says, mikol kli eitz, o veged, o or, o sak. Now that's a disaster, because the Torah is comparing the tumah of all of these items, including the eitz, and it's comparing it, mikol kli eitz, to sak. But sak is only a kli when it functions as sak, it functions as a sack. Exactly. So it has to be capable of carrying things in it. And that means it's meant to be carried around. That gives us a gavi klal. The gavi klal seems to have fallen off the edge of the cliff together with Moshe Handel. Good heavens. And it was one thing when it was just bears, but now when it's a 500-foot-high cliff. Anyway, so now we have a gavi klal that a kli eitz ha'osui l'nachat eino mekabel tumah. If you have a kli that is so heavy, or for some reason it's meant to be only left in one place, then it won't be mekabel tumah. We had this kli many times, and it was nogea many things, things whether there'll be mekabel tumah if they're above a certain size. And the shulchan was meant to stay in one place. It wasn't meant to be moved around at all. You're not supposed to move it. It says, v'natata l'shulchan lechem apanim l'fanai tamid, which many learn means that it has to be in that same place, tamid, which means it's not meant to be moved. So if it's not meant to be moved, it can't be mekabel tumah because of our gavi klal. Kol kli eitz ha'osu l'nachas inu mekabel tumah. Why? Because in the pasuk, it's mukash to sak, and dumya to sak be'inat. Just like sak is mitaltel maleverekan, afkol mitaltel maleverekan. So things that aren't meant to be picked up should not be mekabel tumah. So why does Rabbi Yochanan claim that the shulchan is mekabel tumah, and therefore he's able to learn these dinim about whether a tabla mitapechet is mekabel tumah? Answers the Gemara. This is the famous, beautiful drasha of Reish Lakish that we've seen so many times. The shulchan was actually meant to be picked up. It may be not moved away from its place, but it's mitaltel malev reikat. Because Reish Lakish says, "Mai dechtiv al hashulchan hatohar." First of all, how do you explain the fact that the Torah should use the word v'samta otam shtayim arachot sheish amarechet al hashulchan atohor lifnei Hashem? What do you mean shulchan atohor? That's got to be telling me a chiddush. The shulchan atohor means that it could theoretically have been mekabel tumah, and therefore I can refer to it as either tohor or not tohor. If it's something that can't be mekabel tumah at all, how could I call it tohor? It's a joke. So therefore, why does the pasuk imply, by using the word tahor, michlal de'ika tamei? So you're telling me there's such a thing as a shulchan that could be tamei? How is that possible? If it's a Kli Yetz, that's also the Nachat. This teaches us a wonderful thing, says Rish Lakish. Milamed shemagbihin ato lo l'regolim. It means we pick up the Shulchan so that people that are on the outside can see through the door of the Heichal, and they can see the steam that's rising off of the Lechem. And we're showing them, Mar'im bo alechem, ve'omrim lehem, ru'u chibatchem lifnei ha'makom. Look at how beloved you are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kedivrei Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. The Omer Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Neis Gadol Na'aseh b'Lechem HaPanim. It was an amazing miracle that was done to the Lechem HaPanim. Sivuko kesiduro. At the time that it was taken off on Shabbos, it was still piping hot, the same way that it was when it was put on. Shenemar lasum lechem chom beyomi lakcho. To put bread that is going to remain hot until the day that it's taken off of the Shulchan. And remember that we saw this as being part of the, not just a particular nes that was Nagea, the Lechem Aponim, but that it was part of the nature of the space of Hamokim, Hamokim Erechok, that it was not part of our space-time at all. So that just like the Orion did not take up three-dimensional space, so too the time of the Lechem Aponim was not part of our entropic time. And it didn't make any difference to it how long it was there. And so it didn't cool. There was no second law of thermodynamics if there's no entropy. So that was a function of the Mokim. That nes was shown to Klal Yisrael as if it was a specifically implying the love for them because of this impact that it made. But now, how could Rish Lakish bring a raya that the Shulchan must have been lifted up because otherwise it would never have been Mekabel Tuma? The Shulchan was actually covered with gold. And therefore, if it's got a gold coating, then that gives it a din of gold because we always go according to the plating, as I'll show you. And if it's plated with gold, then it's not eights. So the whole thing makes no sense. First of all, it's not Kli Eitz, that's also Lanachas, it's Kli Zohav. And Kli Zohav does not have to be movable in order for it to be Mekabel Tuma. And furthermore, the whole discussion of Rabbi Yochanan about a tabla of eights that's mitapechet is meaningless. It's not a tabla of eights. It's actually a metallic kli. Of course, a metallic kli is mekabel tuma, no matter what its shape is. Therefore, ask the Gemara, what gives Reish Lakish the right to say that it's mekabel tuma because of ru'uchi batchem lifnei hamakom? Maybe the reason it's mekabel tuma is because it has a tzipui of zahav. And the Mishnah actually tells us in Kalim that we go according to the tzipui, and we don't go according to the fundamental material that's underneath the plating. Where do we see that? Because it says in the Mishnah in Kalim, Hashulchan ve'adulbeki, shenifchatu o chipan b'shayish. So let's say that you've got this table, or you've got these serving trays that ended up having a broken top, or basically you didn't fix them, you actually covered them. You wanted to make them pretty, so you put marble on top of them. But, I mean, it could be talking about that you used, you know, some lead to cover over a hole, whatever. So then it depends how much space is left of the material, the original material of the wood. If you left enough space, there's enough place to put down the wine glasses down on, and it's not covered with marble. So it's a regular kli. So then it's tome. Reb Yehuda says, no, it's not enough just to have space to put down the cups. You need to have place to put down your bread or your food. So then it's mekabel tuma. But suppose you didn't leave enough space, and it's mostly covered with marble. Marble is stone, and kli avonim are not mekabel tuma. So if it's mostly covered with marble and not space for using on the wood or whatever other kli that's mekabel tuma. So dafka v'shir it's mekabel tuma, but lo shir, if you don't have room for that, then it's not going to be mekabel tuma. So if it's plated with marble, it's not mekabel tuma. And then the opposite is also true. If it's plated with gold, so then it would be mekabel tuma because of the gold plating. In which case you have no raya over here that the table was ever lifted because it's not a kli eitz. So the whole sugya falls apart if you go according to the gold plate, and therefore the shulchan is not a kli eitz, it's a kli matechet. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, well, wait a minute. Plating. Now, plating is different. The shulchan wasn't gold plated. What, did we melt gold over it? Did we actually attach the gold to it by screwing it in? No. All of the dinim in the Mishkan where we said that you're supposed to put a plate on it, I hope those aren't closed eyes in an alon, because they sure look like he's fast asleep. Now, it looks okay to be in the light and the sunshine and the brachas ha'ilona is on a Rosh Chodesh, but alon needs to keep his brain and eyes open, or else he'll turn into an alone tree that he's sitting under. That's better.
Can I ask which of them? I'm scared.
All right, so now you're going to tell me, I know what you're going to tell me, that since it's not really gold plate, it's just an additional piece of gold that fits over it. That's the way that everything was made. Remember, how did we make the arayin, an arayin that was covered with gold? We made three aronot, as Rashi describes. The wood was covered on the outside by one that it fit into, and was covered on the inside by a gold aron shape that was fitted into it. But no time was it actually plated and connected. Alon, you sent on, apparently, the job to Richie, but you weren't supposed to send it on. It was off the wall here. So right. Now...
Bardea started it, and he calls it cutting...
It'll take me a couple hours, Barnea, but I'll let you know. So maybe you'll tell me that that's the difference. This is not a gold-plated table. And the Mishnah was only talking about a marble-plated table. But that's not true, because Reish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan, does the Mishnah over here refer dafka to plating that was actually omeid, and it was permanently attached, or betzipui she'eino omeid? Is it talking about only plating that covers everything, including even a small decorative rim? So it's bechapet alavazvizin, or b'shalom mechapet alavazvizin? And Rabbi Yochanan said to him, makes absolutely no difference. Lo shna tzipui omeid, lo shna tzipui she'eino omeid, lo shna chipat alavazvizin, it still goes according to the plating. And therefore, the whole sugya falls apart because the shulchan is gold-plated and it's not kli eitz at all. Now, I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me maybe the din of plating is only on cheap wood. But since the shittim, which was the wood that was used to make the kelim in the Beis HaMikdash, is very valuable and required all of those centuries of preparation, that's very chashuv, and it doesn't become batal to the plating. Well, Hanichal Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that entire halacha in the Mishnah and Kelim was only talking about klei aksilgus habayim mimidinat hayam. That was talking about this cheap wood that they import from China, and that is not valuable. Because of that, if it's covered with gold, it takes, or covered with marble in that case, it takes on the identity of the marble. But if you're talking about kli mismas, which is very expensive wood, that's chashuv, and that is not batal to the gold plating. Okay, so then it works out. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says kli mismas is also batal to the gold plating, so my ikala meimar. Now, obviously, we could have said at this point that, okay, but this is Reish Lakish l'shitasai, right? But, I mean, then that would mean If we would have said that, we would have gotten into a whole big deal, because then we would have said that the whole basis that we had used before there was Mekabel Tumah was Rish Lakish, and that was the idea of a tabla mitapechet. We would have had to say that no, they're two different shitas. So we're assuming that this is not a machlokes. So if we're talking, therefore, about the Shulchan, how do we explain the fact that everybody is made of, that it's called a Kliyetz? Answers the Gemara, it's a Gzeres HaKosuv that turns the Shulchan into a Kliyetz. Why? Because the Torah calls it Eitz on purpose. Shaine Shulchan Derachmona Karye Eitz. The Torah actually dubbed it as wood. Shenemar, going back to Yecheskel, so it says over there, HaMizbeach Eitz Shalosh Amot Gova Orkona. This is obviously talking about the Mizbeach, right? Three Amots and so on. And then there was the Gova, and the Orko was Shtayim Amot, and it had the horns on the Mizbeach, and the Mitzotlo, the Orko, the Kirotav, Eitz. And then the tour guide says the weirdest thing. After bringing Yechezkel to see the Mizbeach, he says, "Vayedaber elai ze hashulchan asher lifnei Hashem." Now, wait a minute. What was it? Was it the Shulchan or was it the Mizbeach? But in any event, it certainly calls the Shulchan a kli of eights, even though it was describing the Mizbeach Eitz, which, by the way, is crazy, says the Gemara. Make up your mind. You started describing something that's a Mizbeach, which is wood, and then you call it the wooden table, the Siyam B'Shulchan. Is it the table or is it the Mizbeach? How do you conflate those two? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, the Amri Tarvayu, that's to teach us a very important halacha, that if you have a Beis HaMikdash, and you've got a Mizbach Kapora, and the Beis HaMikdash is Kayam, so then the Mizbeach is what is Mechaper al HaAdam. But Akshav, She'en Beis HaMikdash Kayam, what takes the place of a Mizbeach? Shulchano shel Adam Mechaper alav. The way in which a person brings guests, brings the poor into his home, and that is the reason that the Torah wants to show you that your Shulchan is the equivalent of a Mizbeach. Okay, a lovely way to enter into our Rosh Chodesh, reminding you that you can get yourselves a haircut lechvod Rosh Chodesh and lechvod Shabbos today, and it's a great opportunity to look like a mensch during this Sfiras HaOmer.